The human brain possesses stunning talents. We still have no idea how it does most of what it does. You might think that an organ of such power would represent the absolute zenith in biological design, you know, Mother Nature's magnum opus. But according to my next guest, the opposite is true. The brain is more like a clumsy two-bit contraption held together by duct tape and chewing gum. Gary Marcus is professor of psychology at New York University, and he's written a new book about what he sees as the brain's oddly jerry-rigged design. It's called Kluge: The Haphazard Construction of the Human Mind. Hi, Gary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Kluge is my new favorite word. Will you describe what it is? It sounds like a cheese-filled Scandinavian pastry or something.
It's a clumsy or inelegant solution to a problem, something that gets the job done, but not necessarily in the best way possible.
Okay, so you're saying the brain is a kluge, and you've said we've got baling wire and chewing gum holding together our gray matter?
Exactly. So there are lots of things about the human mind that could have been a lot better if there'd been a little bit of forethought. So take the structure of human memory. Our memory is nowhere near as good as a machine's memory. Computer, you tell it a phone number once, it remembers it forever. The human mind, you tell it a phone number once, and good luck. Our memories are very disorganized. Rather than knowing where everything is stored, like in a computer, we just have to use a bunch of clues to try to get at what we want. And sometimes, for example, if you want to remember where you parked your car, that's not a very good solution because you kind of remember all the places you parked your car, and right, they all get confused together, and you can't go and find your car when you want it.
So you give this really interesting example of this experiment with scuba divers, where they were made to memorize some facts while diving, and later they were better able to remember them when they were actually underwater.
Exactly. So that's one of the many cues that we use to memory, is where were you when you learned something? You don't necessarily do this consciously, but it happens automatically. Another example is we're sitting down right now. If you try to remember this later when you're standing up, you probably won't remember it as well as if you were sitting here right here in the studio. So the studio becomes part of the cue that you use to remember things.
And then you talk about belief, which you say that evolution built with off-the-shelf components, and our beliefs are often highly influenced by context, just like memory. Take, for example, carrots in McDonald's wrappers. Will you talk about that experiment?
The carrots in the McDonald's wrappers. I think you've actually stumped me for the first time ever. Somebody's asked me a question, I've forgotten the answer. The carrots, and I think that...
Is that your brain being kludgy?
My brain has kludged, and now it comes back to me. That's so embarrassing. Children will prefer something if you put it in like wrappers for fast food. They'll like carrots better if it's in a fast food wrapper than if it's not. So that's a kind of mental contamination where the context influences how you think about a particular thing. So,
but can I like you even more now that you had a kludgy moment. Like if we all remembered things perfectly, and had access to our memories and never, I mean, I mess up saying something at least once a show, then we'd all be kind of like Spock, right? Or you say Buddhist robots.
Exactly. Well, I think Buddhist robots might be, I don't think Spock would be a good thing, but I think Buddhist robots in a way where we could detach ourselves, we would notice how we're doing. If we're doing well, that would be great. If we're not doing so well, that would be okay too. And we would respond, but we wouldn't feel the pain. I think that would be a good thing.
Okay. So you're not saying that the ideal brain would be an automaton void of emotion. It would be that we wouldn't kick ourselves when we messed up?
That would be one of the ways, I think, in which we would be better. If you could learn your lessons without feeling bad. If I went home now and felt bad all day because I forgot about the McDonald's wrappers, that would be bad. Instead, I should learn from my mistake, go out and get it right the next time.
But why should I feel bad? Gary, too, before you leave.
That's excellent.
Now let's go back to the problems with our kludgy brains and belief. You talk about how easy it is to plant ideas in people's heads. So, like in politics, if Barack Obama were to say, you know, John McCain needs to answer questions about his relationship with the Easter Bunny, then people would right off the bat assume there's something unseemly going on.
They might well do that. Lawyers do that all the time. They ask a question, they know the answer isn't true, but they plant that seed in you. That's one of those great off-the-shelf components things. So the reason that's true is that belief derived from perception. And perception, when you see something, you can basically believe it. You see a tree, it's a tree. But in hearing things, people say stuff that's not true. We still accept them automatically, and we only afterwards evaluate, is it true? So the minute that you hear that about McCain and the Easter Bunny, you know, you take it on board, and you have to think about it afterwards. I mean, if it's completely implausible, like the Easter Bunny, that might be an exception. But if you made it a little bit more subtle, I wouldn't want to libel the man on air, then people might well easily accept it.
Right, and there was that study months ago that was saying that whatever percentage of Americans still believe that 9/11 belongs in the same sentence as Iraq.
For example, that one stuck around for a long time. The weapons of mass destruction, 18 months after we invaded, somebody did a survey and something like 70% of Republican voters still believed that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And that illustrates what we call confirmation bias, where you notice the evidence that's consistent with your theory and you overlook the evidence that might go against your theory.
That happens a lot in couples therapy, too.
It does happen in couples therapy. It happens in couples. Hopefully, in couples therapy, you get people to realize, okay, there's another perspective here. And that's generally a good thing for humans to do, but it's not something that comes naturally. It's a good thing for people to take other people's perspectives, realize why they might think that they're justified, think about the data from their perspective, but the brain isn't built to do that automatically.
So why not? You're saying, in essence, the evolution came home one day and realized it was time to make a new brain and just took whatever ingredients lying around, hence the casserole?
It's all spare parts for a casserole. It's all evolution is a tinkerer that doesn't have any foresight. And so all it does is it modifies what's already there. It can't say, you know, it'd be better if we started over. It can't say, for example, for the human spine, this is a crummy design. People have a lot of back pain. Let's just try four columns and shock absorbers and see how that goes. Evolution doesn't have foresight. It doesn't have hindsight. And it's always in a hurry. It's always about which genes propagate now. So there's no opportunity to say, if you started from scratch, you could rebuild the memory structure. And if you rebuilt the memory structure, you could rebuild the belief so that if you did that, then people could, for example, evaluate the data more accurately. But instead, because of the way the memory works and the way that belief is built on top of it, we wind up with confirmation bias. We notice the stuff that fits our theories because it's easier to search our memories for that than stuff that doesn't fit our theories. And the next thing you know, we're gullible, we're clumsy, and so forth.
Do you think our brains are just not that great?
I think they're pretty good, but they could be better. So memory would be the first thing that I would change because so much else depends on it, because we have the mental contamination with the McDonald's wrappers, because we have the mental contamination that allows us to be gullible and so forth. So I'd start with memory. Again, we're pretty good, but there are lots of ways in which if an engineer built the mind, they could have done much better.
So how do we compensate for the kludgy brains? I guess it's a different question than saying, how could they be built better? This question is really, what do we do with what we got?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the more realistic question in the short term. In the long term, we can think about, well, could we re-engineer the species and build brain implants and stuff like that? In the short term, what we have to do is exactly that, to compensate. So what we can do is we can try to deconstruct where do we go wrong and say, how can we deal with it? So here's a good example. Why do we have so much trouble achieving our goals? Well, typical thing is you have some abstract goal, like I want to watch what I eat. And then you have a reflexive system that sees the cheesecake and goes ahead and eats it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is to say, well, the reflexive system works on different principles than the abstract goal system. The abstract goal system is all rah, rah, rah. The reflexive system is all about, if I'm in a particular circumstance, then do some particular thing. So if I'm in a circumstance where there's a crowded room, there are a lot of people talking and I can't pay attention, I'm going to practice such that in that situation, I'm in a restaurant, I'm going to sit on my hands or I'm going to get up and go to the washroom. So that's something that's of the form, if then you can make a habit of that, your reflexive system, your older system can understand that. So you say, if the chocolate cake is tempting, then I'm going to leave the room. You can practice that. You can get good at it. You can go from your goal to something that your ancestral systems can do automatically.
Now, in your book, you anticipate people's questions. And one of them is, aren't problems with memory evolutionary? Like, doesn't it help us to forget things that are painful? What is your response to that?
Everybody wishes that were true, but it's just not really true. So that's a myth that we get from Freud. So I think Freud was right about the sort of id and superego or something like that. But the idea that we could repress memories, it's just wishful thinking. If you look at people who have survived the Holocaust or come back from war and stuff like that, they spend their whole lives trying to forget things. So we don't actually have voluntary control. The reality is that the things that we forget are not the ones we want to forget, but just the ones that are easily confused with other things.
Now, here's a question that perhaps a very religious person could ask. If our brains worked better to make us less fallible, we made less mistakes, we remembered things personally, we always knew I'm not going to eat the chocolate cake, then would we have a higher self? Would there be a better person that we keep trying to make ourselves be? Would we have willpower?
Well, I think we would have had more willpower if we were designed properly. I think that's one of the fundamental errors in our design is we're the only species that's smart enough to plan in advance, but weak enough not to be able to do it. So, personally would prefer that if we had the wisdom to plan in advance, that we had the willpower to actually be able to stick to those plans. But that's just me.
Now, your book is filled with stories that highlight some of the areas in which the mind is clumsy, but I'm not as clear in the hard data that shows these feelings are evidence that the brain was designed by evolutionary kludge. So does that proof exist? Do we know that the physical brain is a kludge?
So we know something about the physical brain, but I would say we know less about it. So there are specific examples, like neurons are very noisy. They're not particularly reliable, and surely that could have been designed better too. But in general, I would say we don't yet know enough about how the brain works to be able to correlate the brain function with the psychology. So we know where things happen in the brain, but we don't know how they work. It's not like a car where you can talk in great detail about what makes it have forward motion, how the gas explodes, and so forth. We kind of just know which parts of the brain do what, but we don't know how they do that yet.
So you're saying if I had designed the mind, I would have done things differently. I'd build a more reliable memory system. Is it possible that these apparent flaws in the brain's design actually facilitate key human abilities, such as the ability to draw inferences or tell a funny joke?
The logic and inference, no, we're not very good at that. People have to learn that in school. It doesn't come naturally, and it would have been nicer, I think, if it came more naturally. If people had better scientific reasoning, if they could understand two sides of an argument better, we would get into less conflict and so forth. So there are places where we can make the most of the kludgy brains that we've got, but that doesn't mean that that's the best thing you could have imagined.
And I wonder, Gary, with all this studying of the kludginess of our brains, does this make you more patient with people and tolerant because you sort of chalk it up to, all of our brains are full of duct tape. They're not bad people.
I try to make myself more tolerant of myself. I try to realize that these are limitations and people are trying to work on them.
That's very kind of you. Gary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Gary Marcus is a professor of sociology at New York University and director of the NYU Infant Language Learning Center. His new book is called Kludge, The Haphazard Construction of the Human Mind. For more about him, visit our website, morefairgame.org.